very important to state, and I think that a lot of people were getting this confused coming into it. This is not a comic book movie.
It is not a Batman movie.
No, not at all. It's barely even a Joker movie,
really. It's barely even a Joker movie.
It's the fanboy and the hater, one who loves joy and one like Vader, one loves pop culture, one thinks it's torture. They both think they're right, so let's hear them fight, reviewing movies and what's on TV. It's the fanboy and the hater.
Hey, I like that. It was pretty catchy.
I hated it. The timing was off and it was out of tune.
Welcome to Fanboy and the Hater,
a podcast hosted and produced by
Mike Hall
and Jim Harris,
where we discuss the best
and worst
in movies,
TV,
and pop culture. Edited by Jim Harris.
And music by Mike Hall. Today we are going to talk about the new Joker movie, which we struggle with calling it a Joker movie. We'll start off a little bit our spoiler-free first impressions for those who have not seen the movie yet. Do you want to start us off with that, Jim?
Today is October 4th, opening day, opening weekend for the Joker here in the United States. And I did not like the movie. I didn't hate the movie. I largely found the movie to be boring and very disappointing. I will have very few things good to say about this movie. We're starting off without spoilers, so I won't get into anything, but I was unimpressed with this movie.
For the first time ever, I completely agree with you on all of your points. I expected more out of this movie. I think this could have been a very, very good movie, but I just felt like they played with the art to the point that they lost the story. If you're a film student or a cinephile where you're in love with cinematography and camera angles and, oh, they did this with his body to demonstrate blah, blah, blah. If that's what you like about movies, you may love this movie. But if you go to a movie for a good story, this is a terrible movie. It's really not good at all. I will have very few things good, positive to say about this movie. And I had high hopes. I thought I might actually really like this movie.
I had low expectations going in, and my low expectations were at war with the fact that so many people were warning me that my expectations will be thwarted or will be subverted by what I might expect from this movie. So I tried to not expect it, but then that also made me think about, well, what am I actually expecting to see from this movie? And that didn't help either way. I agree with what you said. From a cinematography standpoint, a technical execution standpoint, maybe editing and soundtrack. I mean, there are definitely filmmaking technicalities of this movie that were well executed. But in terms of an interesting story, a good character development or plot development or messages or anything like that, no. We'll talk more detail later about some of the backlash or pre-backlash against this movie. When we get to that, I don't understand it. I largely found this movie to be very boring and uneventful.
Yeah. From the little bit that I knew about the movie coming into it, it was almost exactly what I expected, but flat. Like, it just fell flat to me. And I think that they could have done so much more with it if they would have focused more on the character development, focused a little bit more on what they were trying to actually say instead of trying to make it an art film, even though they were blatantly saying what they wanted to say.
Oh yeah, there were parts where they were not subtle at all in the messaging of the movie. We talked about this on back in our very first episode, that we have a very different approach to spoilers. I did actually seek out and read some early reviews of this movie, both spoiler-free reviews of this movie back when it like debuted at like the Venice Film Festival and Toronto Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who reviewed it back then were very good about, we don't want to spoil anything for you because we're seeing an early release of the movie, but they gave their general impressions of it, and it was ran across the spectrum.
Yeah.
But I even read some things from this week from people who had seen it opening week and went into a little bit more detail. But even knowing some of the things that were, air quote, spoiled, did not spoil anything for me, because even when those things happen, it's like, wow. Even though I knew it was coming, was so uneventful, knowing that it was coming didn't help or hurt me in any way. And I kept waiting for things to get interesting or at least something that would make me feel strongly one way or the other. And it just never happened.
Yeah, again, I avoided most spoilers, but I did get a general synopsis of kind of what was going to happen or what the movie was about, at least. I mean, it was exactly what I expected coming into it. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but I knew what the idea of the movie was. I think it is also very, very important to state, and I think that a lot of people were getting this confused coming into it. This is not a comic book movie.
No.
It is based off of a comic book character, but it is not a comic book movie.
Not only is it not a comic book movie, it is not a Batman movie.
No, not at all. It's barely even a Joker movie, really.
It's barely even a Joker movie. You want to talk about things that I find disturbing? I find disturbing what people describe this as. It's not a comic book movie. It's not a Batman movie. Stop calling it either one of those things.
And with that, let's jump into our spoiler review here.
Actually, I don't even feel bad about spoiling this movie. Normally, I would, because we had told you back in our first episode that it probably wouldn't be too many movies we would spoil, because if we saw something in the theater, we would stay away from spoilers. I feel absolutely no guilt about spoiling this movie, because this movie sucks.
It's barely a movie.
It's barely a movie. It deserves to be spoiled. You don't want to waste your money on this movie, in my opinion. So we're going in. Full spoilers ahead!
Look out! Look out for spoilers! Spoilers are coming! Spoilers! Spoilers ahead! Whoa, 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 whoa! Spoilers in 3, 2, 1.
The first thing we want to talk about, let's dive into it a little bit more on why this is not a comic book movie. It's loosely based on a comic book character. I knew that. The director full out said, I got inspiration from the Joker character in Batman, but this is not a movie about it. It's a movie that drew inspiration from that, and I just wanted to investigate what could cause or what could bring somebody into that frame of mind. At least that's how I understood it. So I came into it expecting there to be zero ties to anything Batman, so I was actually kind of surprised that it actually took place in Gotham. I knew Thomas Wayne was going to be in it, but I was really surprised that anybody else was in it. That kind of threw me through a loop a little bit. That was more connected to Batman than I expected it to be. Still wasn't really connected.
It really wasn't. When you're talking about it's not a comic book movie, it was like, well, what is a comic book movie? It's like, not to be overly simplistic, but I think of a comic book movie needs to have a superhero and a supervillain. There was no superhero. There was no supervillain. There was barely a villain. There was a bad guy, but he was portrayed weirdly. And like you said, it's based on a comic book character, but there was no heroic figure. I wouldn't even describe the central character as an anti-hero, because that would be a tremendous disservice as well.
You know what just hit me, and sorry for cutting you off there. There's no protagonist here. There's no antagonist here. You have those people that will tell you a story that they find interesting, and the whole time you're just waiting for it to get interesting, and it never does, and they get done, you're like, was that it? Was I supposed to react to that? That's what this movie is.
Yes, that's why I was saying before, it's like I found this movie largely boring, and it had, like you said, forget superhero, supervillain, there really is no protagonist, antagonist, there is no tension, there's no dramatic story tension in this movie. Some people might vehemently disagree with us, and we're going to talk about Joaquin Phoenix's performance in a bit, but I'm sorry, he's not even the protagonist of this movie. This movie has no protagonist. This movie has... This movie sucks. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find like a more podcasty way of saying it, but this movie sucks.
Yeah, I keep trying to find any way of redeeming it. And the thing was, like, through the movie, I kept waiting for it to get interesting because there's so many points in it that it could have been interesting.
Yes.
This movie could have been amazing if they would have focused on the story they were trying to tell. And they just kept losing focus on that story just to focus on, hey, we need to try to get some awards for this movie. That's how I saw it, at least. And I found it ridiculous, and it missed the point. It missed the mark.
I agree. There were definitely points where it's like, okay, something's about to happen that's going to make me sit up a little bit in my chair and start to take interest. They're going to turn this into something interesting at some point. Nope. So yeah, it was very beguiling in that respect.
And parts of it too is because leading up to the movie, because it went to all these film festivals and there's so much hype around it, and there's all these warnings about all the disturbing imagery that's going on, I kept expecting it to develop more and to be more. And everybody's talking about how disturbing it was and how you felt so uncomfortable the whole time. And I didn't at all.
Oh, yeah. When we were walking into the movie theater this afternoon, there was a sign on the door out front of the movie theater that was specific to this movie. And it said, "This is not your typical comic book film and is only intended for mature audiences. Rated R for strong bloody violence, disturbing behavior, language, and brief sexual images." None of that applies to this movie.
Not really. There's three bloody scenes, but only two of them are really even remotely strong or disturbing. And even those they're pretty light. You see a lot worse in John Wick and movies like that.
You see a lot worse violence in television shows.
Yeah, exactly.
This was not a violent, disturbing movie. There was one scene in particular that was violent and bloody.
This is a spoiler, so
yeah,
let's just...
Yeah, go dive right into it. Like yeah. I said, there's only like three bloody scenes in the entire friggin' movie.
Bloody scene one, the subway scene where he shoots the guys that were attacking him. And even that isn't really that graphic. You see a little bit of blood splatter, and that's about it. The next one, when he's...
There's hardly any blood, and the only part of that that's almost violent is when he runs down the third guy.
Right.
The other two guys he kills relatively quickly, not much.
The first
blood.
Shot you see, like, it's boom. Pretty, like, boom in his face, but mm-hmm. again, you see that.
Oh, yeah.
It's not unique to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
But again, that entire sequence, I've seen there have been worse things on television than that sequence. Go ahead, sorry.
And then the next one where he's killing his quote-unquote friend. And yeah, that gets a little violent as he's beating his head against the wall over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
And using the scissors to stab him in the throat and the eye.
But again, that's not abnormal. You see
that
a lot.
It's not abnormal, and even those aspects are not on screen very much.
Right, he gets flashes.
They're flashes. He gets blood splashed on him, and then the rest of it is him bashing the guy's head against the wall.
But you don't see that either.
It's bloody, but most of the gory stuff... I'm sorry, but Walking Dead has had bloodier, gorier scenes.
Oh, for sure.
Than anything that was in this movie. So I'm sorry, but I completely do not understand this whole, oh my God, this movie is very disturbing and will be incitable of violence. There is an inciting of violence thing with dialogue, which we'll come back to later. But the actual violent content of this movie, I'm sorry, but it's laughable.
You compared it to Walking Dead, and I just had a curiosity image in my head. You think when he was smashing his head against the wall, the guy's eye popped out?
Maybe. But he didn't have a bat with spikes on it, though.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. Now I wish it was more graphic.
And let me step back. It's like, I don't like gore. I don't dislike it either, but like, I'm not a big fan of like slasher movies or even horror movies. So it's not like I love blood and guts and was disappointed that it was absent. I don't mind that stuff when it's in movies. I don't go search it out. But I'm sorry, but if you're disturbed by the violence in this movie, I'm confused because it's not violence.
To me, this could have been PG-13.
Yeah, for like strong language. I'm sorry, we fucking swore more in this review.
Yeah, I can't even think of them using any strong language.
I don't even think there were any. Like, what strong language? Yeah, this movie did not need to be rated R. There was no strong language. There was no... The brief sexual images were pictures of naked women that flash on the screen briefly. There's been more nudity on television.
Yeah, they're like small clippings that are in his journal that if you're not looking directly at it, trying to figure out what it is, mm-hmm. you're not even going to notice what it was.
This could be put on television without a TV MA rating when it comes out and starts getting played on TV. There's no fucking reason that this movie is rated R. To me, it's almost like a marketing gimmick. That they rated it R and they did it. Oh, be very careful about going to this movie. You'll find it disturbing. Fuck you. It's not disturbing.
If you can't tell by Jim's high voice, he is angry.
I am angry, man.
This was not a good movie at all. But there's, and a lot of people too.
My review of this movie is more disturbing than this movie is.
Part of those warnings too is, I mean, there's a lot of things like, oh, this is a white man who's downtrodden that's going to take his revenge on everybody. That's not really what this movie is about. It's about a guy who is beaten into mental illness that finally reaches breaking point. not because of people picking on him necessarily. It is, he has been treated differently because of his mental illness, not because of anything else. And that's what eventually makes him snap.
I still have a problem with this. I don't really buy in 100% that this is a mentally ill character. He has a neurological condition that causes him to laugh, and we can talk about the laugh in a second. There is a little card that he shows people in the movie that has as part of its description that he laughs uncontrollably due to a neurological condition, not because he finds something funny. But to me, that was more like a Tourette's syndrome nervous tick,
yeah.
Not necessarily a sign of mental illness. Because other than that inappropriate laughter and a few daydreamy type delusion type things, I didn't really see anything that I would categorize as mental illness in the central character.
Right. And that stuff, too, I would almost put that off on the fact that he's just lonely. He's creating those worlds in his own head because he's weird and lonely.
Yeah, he's a weird guy.
And that's because of that tick that he has.
Right,
he's isolated.
He's isolated because of that tick, and he's weird, and he's awkward socially because he has very few friends because he's weird. But I don't buy him as a mentally ill person. I'm not saying that he's not off in some way, but I don't buy this as his violence is a result of his mental illness, because I don't even buy that he's mentally ill. His mother is mentally ill. And yes, at the end of the movie, he ends up in an insane asylum, and he does belong there for what he does in the movie. But I don't buy it as a reasoning for his violence. And back to your earlier point, the whole, white man doesn't get what he wants from the world, so he resorts to violence. Yeah, that would be a shitty message, but that's not the message of this movie.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
That's not what I took away. Yeah. Is there a white guy who doesn't like his life and he resorts to violence? Yeah, that's what happens. But that's not the message of the movie. That's just because the guy's white and he does that. The most disturbing aspect of it, we'll get to it later. He says something dialogue-wise near the end of the movie, which I really think could have been phrased better, which I really truly think it's that dialogue that people are dialing in on for the
thing. Just jump in it. Just go ahead and...
At the end of the movie, and again, we've only seen it once. We just literally saw it in the theater a few hours ago. But near the end of the movie, he says something along the lines of, if you take someone who's mentally ill and you treat him poorly, then you get what you deserve. So there was like this really bad message that's like, he's mentally ill and he was treated poorly. So what else would you expect to happen than for him to get violent and kill people? That's fucking stupid. And the fact that the movie didn't try to show that, but had the character say that, was stupid. If you actually want to have that as a message, show us that. Give us a movie with a believable, that guy's mentally ill, he became violent, maybe that was the reason. Don't give me a dialogue of, well, if I'm mentally ill, you treat me like crap, what do you think's going to happen? Fuck you, that's not storytelling.
Yeah.
Fuck off. I'm sorry. I'm swearing a lot in this episode, but I'm sorry. This movie fucking sucks.
Yeah. That's why I keep going into saying this could have been a really good movie, and they had a lot of instances where they could have shown that.
Yes.
But they don't. There's a few instances where they do kind of show it, but they don't. They spend so much time showing him dancing and stuff like that.
I don't understand that at all. What the fuck? That was that? They're trying to win some type of artistic award? I thought those scenes were stupid.
I think they were trying to say that the dancing is his way of escaping and being in a world where he's happy. But they could have easily had dialogue on that explained that, and then not have to use dialogue in the other stuff to show. I mean, that's
what... Yes, again, it's like they could have made this movie have some of the things that they think that the movie has if they had actually done it. But yeah, I mean, they did use a few times where they sold or almost sold the idea of mental illness with the delusions of how he thought that his neighbor. We had scenes where it made it look like, even though it was completely unbelievable, even if you're not familiar with some of the source material that influenced this movie, like The King of Comedy, I didn't believe for one moment that his neighbor lady was his girlfriend, but they showed scenes that made it look like it. And then later in the movie, they showed an obvious sort of flashback of, he completely fantasized all of that and it wasn't real. So that was actually a way of, you showed us mental illness.
Yeah.
You didn't tell us that. So if there was more stuff like that, where we could have seen things where he was really breaking from reality and going off into his own little fantasy world, and that was completely distorting things, then I would buy it. They didn't do that, though.
Yeah, the whole time with him with his neighbor doing stuff, the whole time I'm watching, I'm thinking, what's going on? She's way too hot and way too young. Is this just bad casting? What's going on here? Or is this imaginary? And that's where I kind of kept going back and forth. I even took a few notes on that. I'm like, is he really dating this really hot girl? And then later, like, oh, nope, it was imaginary. They showed it. They didn't have to have the flashback to show that.
They didn't.
I think that took me out of it, at least.
They didn't need it, but that was the only time, like I said, because they did the flashback, it was a show, not tell. It was unnecessary, but at least it wasn't something where they tried to come out bluntly with dialogue, but they actually tried to do something filmmaking, storytelling-wise.
I think what they should have done is, in those scenes as they're happening, just kind of shift to a different camera angle and she's not there anymore, mm-hmm. rather than having to have the flashbacks later.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not a director. I'm not winning any awards, but that's how I would have done it. Now, I think it would have made more sense and it would have given you a little bit more time to do other things.
Yeah, and if the whole dancing sequences, kind of like what you were saying, were replaced with show some other fantasy world, show us what he thinks he's seeing when he's dancing.
Or even in the very first therapy session, just have her say something like, what do you do that makes you feel better? And he says, I like to dance.
Mm-hmm.
A simple two lines like that would have made that work so much better for me.
Right. Or something like where you see him like walking down the street and people are just like pushing him out of the way and stuff like that. And he's getting bullied or whatever. And then you see a sequence where he's like dancing down the street around people. And then that's where like he goes into his head. And that's how that fantasy world that he's helping himself get through. None of that. We just see a bunch of weird scenes of him dancing by himself.
What you didn't see was Jim started dancing in his seat while he was flailing his arms like he normally does.
And I was dancing really good. Don't listen to Mike. I'm a great chair dancer. I can't dance on the dance floor, but you put me in a chair, I can dance.
I really can't wait. One of these days, we're going to do a video recording of us doing this, and you're going to see how flaily Jim is. It's a constant struggle for me because he starts talking with his hands way back from his microphone. Like, you're not talking into your mic anymore.
It's reason why my audio seems to jump around all the time, but Mike stays nice and level.
Yeah, because I'm too lazy to move.
From the galactic depths of the comic book universe comes the Ghosts of the Stratosphere, ready to galvanize and energize your mind with the latest of comic book news and reviews. And why are you stopping me? Yes, that's much better. Hi, this is Andy Larson for Ghosts of the Stratosphere. Join me every week along with my co-hosts Rob Stewart and Chad Smith, as well as a cavalcade of fantastic comic book guests, as we dish out heaping helpings of the greatest and latest of comic book news and reviews. New shows posted every Tuesday, with bonus shows every first Friday of the month. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher under Ghosts of the Stratosphere, as well as on our website, www.gotstratosphere.com. Hope to see you soon, folks.
So Joaquin Phoenix, everyone is talking about how amazing he is in this movie and how he's going to be nominated for awards. Let's talk about his performance, because he is really he has the bulk of the screen time in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much everything is just him.
Yeah, I mean, there are other people in the movie, but you don't see them very often.
Right. He did do a good job. He never really broke character. He stayed true to that character. My only problem was I didn't buy the character transition. If the ending character was going to be the ending character, there needed to be some hint of that type of character at the beginning, and there wasn't. Other than the tick, there was zero similarities between the beginning character and the end character.
I was expecting them to actually show the laughter as a tick at the beginning turn into him. He takes control of the laughter and he's laughing.
Yeah.
Like the Joker laugh at the end. So I was expecting him, the tick goes away because he's now become the person he wants to be. And now he's fully in control. And when he laughs, he's doing a real laugh and not the, I'm not even going to call it a Joker laugh. The laugh he does in the movie, I don't like. I don't really like it on any level. Yeah. So if it, I think maybe the reason I didn't like it, I was expecting it to evolve. Later in the movie, I was expecting that to evolve into something that he had control over, not a tick.
I expected anything to evolve about the character, but it's like it just, at one point, it just clicks and he becomes a different character. I expected a slow evolution, and there really wasn't. Like, you saw a little minor hints that something was going on in his head, which, again, I guess that's him doing a good job as an actor, just showing small hints. As far as, like, writing, directing, like, there should have been a slower or more obvious transition rather than just, at the end, click, hey, I'm the Joker now.
Yeah, I would have almost accepted that. But yeah, there wasn't that. Like, that's the thing that's frustrating. I don't think it wasn't a bad acting performance. I'm not saying that. I just think the performance was bad because the movie was bad. He did what he could with it. But it's like, yeah, there was no character development. I was very surprised at how relatively early on he kills people for the first time. Pseudo self-defense, you can maybe chalk up the first of the three people that he kills all
maybe
at once.
Maybe
the first two. But when he runs down and murders the third person, which might have been arguably more in self-defense of, well, if I let this guy go, he'll tell the police who I am, maybe, I don't know. But that was more murdery, where the first two was self-defense. How little his character changed even after that. Like, he kills three people, and very little character development happens. Actually, like I said, very little character development happens throughout the entire movie until, like I said, at the very end, he clicks into a character, and then at the very, very end, in the asylum, he's a much different, more sort of owning his persona type of thing.
Yeah.
And there was no build-up to that whatsoever that sold that for me. Again, I think maybe it is more the directing and writing's fault, and not, I can't really blame Joaquin Phoenix, but I'm sorry, but his performance was flat because the movie was flat.
Let's talk a little bit about his ability to act like he lost a bunch of weight.
That was one of the things that's most striking in this movie, and it's one of the things that's almost like Oscar bait. Academy Awards are so often, or at least nominations, are given to any actor or actress who goes through a significant physical transformation to get ready for a role. I don't know how physically jacked or fit, we like saying jacked on this podcast for some reason. I don't know how physically fit Joaquin Phoenix is in real life, but he obviously lost a lot of weight to play this role.
I think
it's
at 50-something pounds.
And he is
grossly underweight.
He's grossly underweight and unnecessarily partially naked for large portions of this movie. I think just so that we can see how much weight he lost for this role, then make sure that the Academy notices that so that he gets his nomination.
I don't get why. I understand how difficult it is to lose the weight like that and to try to stay healthy. I understand that. But people try to portray that as an acting ability, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, I agree with that completely as well. That is not acting.
Right. Yeah, I could not eat anything but rice for 6 months and lose a bunch of weight and be incredibly sickly thin. Doesn't make me an actor.
Right, exactly. I guess you can call it dedication to the craft, but yeah, in and of itself, that is not acting ability.
But he does do a good job of acting as well.
I mean, yeah, like I said, he is a good actor.
I just don't think that should go into his acting.
Yeah, but that, I think that too often is what people focus on when they go do, especially for award nominations. Yeah, that should not be a reason why you thought his acting was good, just because he lost a lot of weight for the role, which he did. But again, yeah, if you wanted to point to anything in the movie, again, going back to what we said before, I didn't find this movie disturbing. The only thing I found disturbing, he was creepy looking physically just because of how much weight he lost. And again, because they also...
And there's something going on with his shoulder. Like, I don't know if he has like some sort of injury or something, or he was contorting it that way on purpose.
It goes back to the whole thing. It's like they had him partially naked for large portions of the movie because they really wanted us to notice how weird looking his body was.
Yeah.
For no reason. And
it just took me out of the movie because then I'm just wondering, did Joaquin Phoenix have some sort of shoulder injury somewhere in his life that caused that? Or I have no idea what's going on there. So that it really just took me out of it more than anything. And
yeah,
it was just gross.
I felt I felt bad for the actor.
Yeah, yeah, I did too.
For having to lose all the weight to play the role, but it did not make me in any way appreciate his performance.
Right. Oh, beyond what I already appreciated. I mean, he did a good job. I wouldn't say he did a great job, but he did a good job. I believed he was that character through the whole thing. So, he did a good job there. Hey, we said something positive.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, other actors did a good job, too. Like, I think everybody did a pretty good job.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there was any bad acting.
The only thing
in
I didn't buy was, as I wrote here, mobster Johnny Carson. I did not in the least bit buy Robert De Niro as a late night comedy talk show host. He had brief one-liners that were generically funny, but no, it was like he was strong-arming everyone. I'm funny, right?
The only reason I bought him is because I saw The King of Comedy, which is a 1983 Martin Scorsese film starring Robert De Niro, and it was a major influence on this movie. And Robert De Niro had even said that his character in The Joker was an homage to his character in that movie. I think that that's the only reason he was in this movie, was because of The King of Comedy. The King of Comedy was a very weirdly good-ish movie. That movie was awkward and disturbing, but not disturbing like they were describing The Joker. It was just an uncomfortable movie to watch at times. And there were definitely times where Robert De Niro, because it was his character, needed to be this. He thought he was funny, but he wasn't funny. So that was kind of what his character was like. Although he did get to do an actual monologue in that movie. And he actually was pretty funny at the end of that movie. But it still was sort of a bit of a stretch. But it worked in that movie because he thought he was funny, but he really wasn't funny. In this movie, yeah, he wasn't. Not only was he not terribly funny in his role, when he shifted towards the end of the movie, when he went from being the late night show host into more like a news anchor type guy, I think, as you had remarked before we were recording, after the Joker basically admits that he came on the show to say that he murdered a bunch of people. And then instead of everyone freaking out and calling security and running away, Robert De Niro's character starts basically interviewing him like he's a news reporter.
Yeah.
So that transition was very unrealistic. Actually, that whole scene for me, which was basically the penultimate scene of the movie, I thought was very unrealistic.
Well, see, and that scene is the only scene where you see transition into the actual Joker character.
Yes.
That should have been throughout the whole thing. That transition should have been spread out through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. Not even a little bit.
And it only happened in that, it wasn't even that entire scene. It only happened in the very later portions of that scene because Robert De Niro's character pissed Joaquin's character off, that flipped the switch. Because, again, another big spoiler, Joaquin Phoenix practiced going on the talk show. And when he practiced in his apartment, the punchline, I'm doing air quotes, of his joke was he was going to blow his own head off. He was going to commit suicide on live television. Which isn't funny. But instead, because Robert De Niro's character pissed him off, he decided to shoot and kill De Niro instead. So he blows his brains out.
Which I'm disturbed, and that was kind of funny.
Which was probably the only disturbingly violent part of it, but you could see it coming. And even then, yeah, he got his head blown off. It wasn't, again, there's been more graphic violence on TV shows like The Walking Dead and many other than what we saw in that scene. And again, the only part of that scene when that was truly disturbing to me, like we already said, was the whole, his justification for violence. What else would you expect? You're getting what you deserve. If you take someone who's mentally ill and you treat them poorly, what else do you expect to happen? You're getting what you deserve. And again, I thought that that was just a stupid piece of dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you there. There wasn't really much there. And again, we've already talked how they tried to portray it as mental illness. And I could see maybe parts of it, but like I said, it was mostly more isolated loneliness creating it, along with because of the tic that he had was created by abuse, trying to get you to feel sorry for the character, feel bad for the, or emotionally connect
to him
somehow.
Which even then, though, that's more like trauma. That's almost more like brain damage than mental illness.
Yeah.
Physical injury, that trauma causing brain damage that could alter behavior, which is a real thing. As opposed to mental illness, which is not the same thing. So they almost kind of conflated those two together. In The King of Comedy, Robert De Niro's character was a mentally disturbed individual, but at no time is he called that. He doesn't go to a psychiatrist. He's not on medication. But you know, because of the way he plays that character, he's mentally disturbed. I never saw Joaquin Phoenix as a mentally disturbed person. I saw him as a socially awkward person with that annoying tic, which fed into his loneliness and his isolation, and he had a very unfortunate life.
Yeah.
I didn't see mental illness.
Yeah. And we had talked about, before we saw this movie, we talked about possibly rolling this into, hey, let's talk about different versions of the Joker and how they possibly tie together or anything like that. We decided against it because this is so not a Joker movie that we didn't feel right even comparing it because it's so different.
I think that's probably what I'm actually been calling this episode is, it's not a Joker.
Yeah, that's why he's been so adamantly not calling the character the Joker.
That's why I keep saying Joaquin Phoenix. I'm not even calling him the title of the movie. I greatly appreciate the actual Joker character in Batman comic books, movies, and animated series and shows, and I think it's a fascinating character. I refuse to acknowledge this film as contributing to that character.
I agree with you. And that's, I mean, the Joker is a very strong character with so much to it. The last 10 minutes of the movie, yeah, that was pretty close to a Joker that I could see. But other than that, no, not even a little bit.
The Joker's actual origins in the comic books have been rather either obscured or multiple different origins. So I know I wasn't expecting, oh, they had to do it a certain way because there are different ways to do it. I can't even accept this as an alternate origin story for the character. I'm sorry, I reject it as being part of it. I would even say, if you took out, they went out of their way, like you said, to connect this to Batman. If you take the Waynes and Gotham City out of this movie, it could just be called Killer Clown or something.
From outer space!
From outer space! It doesn't even have to be connected to Batman in any way whatsoever. They wouldn't even have to take a lot out of this movie. Just don't set it in Gotham. And don't mention the Wayne family at all, and just give the movie a different name. So that's the other thing that annoyed me about it and why I don't connect it to the character is because he heavy-handedly connected it to the Batman. In fact, as I joked earlier before we started recording, I don't see a Joker origin story. I see a very weird, long way around Batman origin story.
Yeah.
Because poor Thomas and Martha.
Why did you say that name?
They get killed in this movie in front of Bruce, not by the Joker, not by Joaquin Phoenix, which again is not canon or whatever because you can't call it canon. But again, that was like a pivotal scene late in the movie. It's like, hey, a Batman origin story. We don't need to see that again, but not Joker.
I think this movie was just a trick to be like, hey, everybody's saying that we don't need another Batman origin. Let's make a whole movie. And then trick him at the end. Hey, it's a Batman origin movie. Ha ha.
So now in the Robert Pattinson Batman movie, they won't have to do an origin story. They'll just have a flashback scene that'll be the scene from this movie.
Which although they've already said it's not connected.
Yeah, because it's a one-off movie, so it's not connected.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I guess this leads, I guess, well into our next question. Was it real or was it imaginary?
I really think it was imaginary.
Because a lot of the things that I'm screaming about maybe are explained this way. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I cut you off.
No, I was going to say, at the very end, it shows him talking to the therapist and then just kind of snaps and you assume that he killed the therapist. But I really think that's the same therapist as earlier when he was told that they can't meet anymore because the social service program was canceled. And they never show him getting caught or anything like that either.
No, because he was arrested. He never shown getting caught. They show him in a cop car, but he gets sprung from the cop car.
Right.
And then we go flip right to him. He's in, they don't call it Arkham Asylum.
It's Arkham
State Hospital.
Yeah,
something like that. But it's basically Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. I think in there, basically, because he's still talking to that same therapist. So I think in talking to the therapist, he's having these images and these flashes and this imaginary life of how things could have gone. And that makes him snap.
Yeah, because maybe the scene that we saw him talking to that therapist in a city social services office in the beginning of the movie, maybe that was a complete fabrication and he was always in that padded room.
That's what I was
in Arkham
thinking.
And the entire thing was imaginary. Again, this is also a bit of an homage to King of Comedy because there are large sequences in King of Comedy where it's very overt that Robert De Niro is having fantasies and you know you're in on it because it's there are some scenes where it's blatant that you know this didn't really happen because he reimagines a scene that you just watched having it happen a completely different way or he imagines something happening in the future that you know is not real. But then later in the movie, they get a little bit sneakier about it. And the way that the movie ends is open-ended. It's like, when that King of Comedy ends, you're like, is that really the end of the story? Or is Robert De Niro in one of his little fantasy head trips again? And even after the movie came out, Martin Scorsese, who made that movie, said, it's open to you to interpret it however you want. Which I think was actually pretty cool. A few sequences, again, as we mentioned earlier about the girlfriend being a fantasy construct, that he didn't really have a relationship with the woman down the hall. But that was about the only time that they did that. So if they did it a little bit more, maybe I could buy into it. But I definitely believe that it's at least possible. I don't know if it makes the movie better, but maybe it makes it a little bit more acceptable if it was all just imaginary.
What I would have liked to see was, like, in, as we mentioned before earlier, when he's dancing, and we said we would have liked to see him actually go into an imaginary world when he's dancing. I would have liked to see not only him in a world, but a very bright colored, vibrant world, which then would explain the bright colored, vibrant suit that he wears at the end of it as he becomes a Joker, because he's trying to make that world. And I would have also liked to see that world, like when he comes out in the riot, to be a little bit brighter and less dark, as if he came into that world the way he wanted to.
Or if the entire movie was told basically in flashbacks, like if at the beginning of the movie, he's in that padded cell with the therapist, they're talking, and she's like, well, what do you think happened that got you here? And he starts telling the story, and there are flashback sequences. And then when he's dancing, we see him like dancing in the padded cell and stuff. And then it's like, okay, is he really telling us what happened? Or is he telling us his version of how he thinks happened? That actually might have even made the movie better. Like you had said earlier, there were ways that this could have been a good movie, but they didn't take any of those. Not that the ways that we're talking about are the only ways, but maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm so mad about it. There was potential in this movie that was just unrealized.
I almost feel like the director took this movie in a way where he was mocking movies that get awards, and now he's possibly getting awards. Because he's up for... Or at least there have been talking awards for this movie already, and it just came out.
Oh, it won awards at the film festivals.
Yeah.
I think at the Venice Film Festival and maybe also the Toronto Film Festival. So it did win awards there.
Which I think obviously we're saying that it does not deserve. Maybe all the other movies there were terrible.
Yeah, again, I don't know a lot about how those film festivals work. So I don't know. Yeah, like you said, maybe that was like the only, maybe the other ones were more indie films or experimental films.
Or maybe, again,
this
is going to be also, those types of festivals are for cinephiles and students and stuff like that. And again, if you're looking at this movie from that angle, it probably is a very good movie. I'm also of the opinion most of the time, if a movie gets a whole bunch of awards, I'm probably not going to like it.
And again, to your point, there's a reason why those are separate categories, and for like editing and for cinematography and stuff like that. And again, I don't follow those categories very closely, but many times you see some of the movies that don't win for like acting and directing and picture win some of those other awards. And I definitely agree. There are some aspects of this film from a cinematography standpoint deserve award recognition. If it's nominated, that's one thing, but this is not an Academy Award winning film. In my opinion, this is not an Academy Award-winning performance by Joaquin Phoenix, in my opinion.
I really think Chris Hemsworth out of Endgame deserves a better nod for acting than Joaquin Phoenix.
You want to talk about a role where they did it with a fat suit, so it's not in the same thing, but a physical transformation, which again you said is not acting, and that's not why Fat Thor worked, but talking about someone who displayed a physical transformation and acted mental illness.
Exactly.
Avengers Endgame, Chris Hemsworth, I completely agree with you on that. Joaquin Phoenix, I see neither of those. The physical transformation was real, not a fat suit. But again, physical transformation alone is not acting. Yeah. But again, portrayal of mental illness? No. I'm sorry. Dude Thor was a better portrayal of mental illness than Joaquin Phoenix's character, who I refuse to name.
So saith the Jim.
So saith we all. Well, I think we've said, and I've definitely fucking sworn enough about this movie. Let's take this toward our conclusion with our closing thoughts for the movie that I refuse to name. Let's start with you.
I think they tried to sum it up at the end of this movie where he says the line something similar to, I always thought my life was a tragedy, but it turns out it was a fucking comedy. Well, I think he was a little bit backwards, and it was a tragedy. And I think this movie is a tragedy because it could have been so good, and it's so bad. This is a movie based on a character that is one of my favorite characters, and I never want to see this movie again.
I hope you at home can appreciate, if Mike doesn't want to see a movie more than once, there's something fucking wrong with that movie.
Yeah, I watch movies repeatedly because I love picking out little details and stuff that are in there. And this one, no. There's only two other comic book movies that I've ever not wanted to watch again. That's the second Ghost Rider movie and Dark Phoenix.
I went back and forth a couple of times on what my rating was going to be. At first, I was going to say, fridge this movie, because there was one scene that I have no idea why it's in the movie. At one point in the movie, Joaquin Phoenix pulls all of the shelves out of his refrigerator and climbs into his refrigerator and closes the door. I have no idea what that scene was supposed to mean, if it was supposed to mean anything.
I think that scene, sorry, I didn't mean to butt in, but I really think there's more to that scene where maybe he was trying to commit suicide by locking himself in the fridge. And maybe there's more to it later that somebody came in and opened the door or something.
Hmm.
Because you saw him, he reopened the door, then slammed it shut, and it clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And old fridge is like, there's not going to be a way to open it from the inside.
Oh, that's a good point.
So maybe there might have been more to it. But they cut it out! So that made it pointless and stupid and just leaves you dead there going, what the hell was that about?
Right. And we've talked in a previous episode about what fridging is. So I thought that was their literal attempt to fridge. Normally, fridging is done to a secondary character to provide plot or character development to the primary character. But in this case, the primary character fridged himself. Maybe my only thing is,
He can go fridge himself.
Maybe that was him saying, you know what? I want out of this movie.
Yeah.
This movie is so bad, I'm fridging my character. But nope, I actually decided that my final rating is $5.37. That's what I spent to see this movie.
Matinee discount.
I want my fucking $5.37 back. Thank you for listening to The Fanboy and the Hater. We really appreciate it and would love to hear your feedback. Give us a rating, leave us a comment, reach out to us on Twitter at @FanboyAndHater, email us at thefanboyandthehater@gmail.com. You can find all of our episodes on our website, fanboyandhater.podbean.com, that's PODBEAN, where you can download the free Podbean mobile app for iOS and Android. Find us on all podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and many more. Once again, thanks for listening to The Fanboy and the Hater.